morning. How's everybody doing?
Good.
All right. Well, as you can see, we're in the middle of a series, Summer in the Civil Sages. We're talking about kind of the big question of wisdom, and that can be kind of attacked from or viewed from lots of different angles. But I'm going to hit it from one angle, and hopefully it's a little helpful. If you don't know me, my name is Jason Mallett. I'm one of the founding pastors of New Denver, so it really is fun to be here, to be with you. I know there's a number of folks who I haven't met, so I hope I have a chance to meet you at some point. By the way, Scott, Julie, thank you. That was wonderful. How many of you, I'm going to start with asking a question. How many of you have ever had like a lunch or coffee with somebody, and about halfway through the conversation, you haven't seen them probably in a little bit, but you know them fairly well, but halfway through the conversation, you realize, I'm not going to get a word in edgewise with that. That ever happened to you? You know that kind of person? Or maybe you have a boss, right? And the boss is somebody who knows everything. You are very much the subordinate. You're the person who takes instructions, who does what the boss says. You may have a parent or a spouse or a dear friend, college friend who's like that. And you find yourself asking the question, what is it about this person? Why is it that whenever we get together, whenever we spend time together, I find myself listening a whole lot, whether by choice or by mandate, and listening to this person talk on and on and on. I've thought about that a lot, and my guess is you know people like this. I wonder, what is it about that circumstance? What is it about that personality? Is it insecurity? Is it ego or arrogance? Are we just that boring that there's really nothing for us to offer or add value to the conversation? Are they avoiding something? What is it about people like this that are so dominant or so dominating with conversation that they don't really invite conversation? They don't invite others to really participate in that. Contrast that with the person who's exactly the opposite. The person who really invites conversation, who's deeply interested in who you are. You sat at coffee or lunch with that person. You sat with that boss, that supervisor, who is deeply interested in making you feel like or maybe even be the best that you can possibly be. They deeply care for you. They ask questions. They invite you into conversation. You know people like that? Maybe some of you are that type of person. They're incredible to be around, aren't they? Because this type of person, I like to say it this way, when I leave a conversation with them, I end up feeling better about myself rather than better about them. You know that type of person, don't you? You walk away and you think, I don't know what just happened, but I'm actually walking a little lighter. I feel better about who I am. I feel better about the things that I'm doing. And ultimately, you do end up feeling better about who they are because they've invited conversation. They've invited you to become somebody maybe that you weren't before. You know people like that. I have a dear friend. His name is Justin Elam. He's one of Stephen's and my good friends back from Atlanta. He's the second type of person. My guess is Stephen would agree. Justin, when you leave a conversation with him, actually during the conversation, I almost get uncomfortable because he is so riveted on me, on who I am, on what is interesting to me, what are my dreams and hopes and fears. What are the things that I love? What are the things that I hate? What's new? What's not new? He really likes to drive deep, and not in kind of an awkward or uncomfortable way. It's because he deeply wants it. It's almost like Justin is sitting with Bono or the Pope or the President, and every time I leave a conversation with Justin, I think to myself, that guy, he's just got an incredible gift. He makes me a better person by being with him. And I thought, what is it? What is it about Justin? What is the gift that he has that makes me feel better about myself after leaving time with him? I think as I've realized, and I've even shared this with him, as I've thought about it, the thing that I think is most profound in Justin and in the gift that he brings is he is an amazing question asker. See, every time I spend time with him, he's constantly asking questions, and again, not in an uncomfortable or kind of a pejorative way. He's really deeply interested in who I am. He asks incredible questions. And my guess is, you spent time with people like that. People who are interested, deeply interested in you, and as a result, you end up wanting to hang out more with them, don't you? I know I do. It's not like their questions are penetrating in a way that is again kind of demeaning, but Justin makes me think about things in a different way. It makes me think about myself, about others, and in our relationship, he makes me think about God in a different way. Questions, they're an interesting phenomenon, aren't they? If you kind of think about the essence of questions, just real basic, the essence of questions and the question asker, here's a couple of maybe observations. Questions, we oftentimes think, reveal a vulnerability, don't they? Because in a sense, if you think about it, when I'm asking a question of somebody, that puts me in a position of inferiority. I'm below that person in a sense. I'm asking because I don't know. I'm naive, and this person I'm assuming knows. And yet, as we look at the sages, those who have gone before us, we couldn't see anything that resembles that. In fact, it's the exact opposite. Here's a couple of samples of sages through the ages. I will put on the screen for you. Voltaire, one of the kind of modernist thinkers, philosophers, scientists, said, "Judge a man by his questions rather than by his answers." Judge a man by his questions rather than by his answers. In other words, it is almost maybe more important the questions one asks than the answers that they give. Or how about this? This African proverb says, "The one who asks questions doesn't lose his way." That's how we see for us men. Get lost in going to ask questions, right? Or how about Claude Strauss? He says, "The scientist is not a person who gives the right answers. He's the one who asks the right questions." Chinese proverb says this, "He who asks a question is a fool for 5 minutes, right? That reveals that kind of naivete. But he who does not ask a question is a fool forever." And Francis Bacon last says this, "A prudent question is one half of wisdom." In other words, half of what it means to be wise is to understand that the value of a good question, a prudent question, is incredibly important. So what's going on here? I mean, if questions and asking questions is so important, why is it somewhat of a rare occurrence in our circumstances, in our everyday circumstances? Why am I not great at asking questions? Why am I up here kind of talking rather than asking questions? Of course, I guess that's another question right there. But why is it in our world, in our education system, for example, do we value people, do we grade people based on the answers they give rather than the questions they ask? I think there's a lot of reasons, but we're going to take a look at some of the sages through the ages who hopefully can teach us a little bit about questions. We'll look at 3 primary characters and hopefully tease out what it means and the value of asking questions. The first person we're going to look at is David. King David, if you don't know, lived around the 11th century BC. He was the second king of Israel. He wrote a large part of the Bible, the Book of Psalms, most of the Book of Psalms, and was an incredible question asker. David was a warrior, a poet, a king, a musician. He wrote just incredible, beautiful, beautiful lyrics and words. But the thing that I most appreciate about David is he was a great question asker. He was incredibly introspective. He asked questions about himself, about others, and maybe most importantly, David asked questions about God. Here's a couple of questions that David asked from the Psalms. He said, "Oh Lord, how long?" This is Psalm 6, verse 3. You can almost picture David like yearning for who God is and where God is, because David lived a very difficult life. If you read through the Psalms and read through some of the historical books, you see that David was not a king who was celebrated all the time. In fact, prior to his kingship, he was pursued and people wanted to murder him. And you can almost see him saying, "Lord, how long must I wait? Lord, I have been faithful. How long?" He says later in the Psalms, "What is man?" He's speaking to God. "What is man that you are mindful of him?" Here we are, 7 billion people roughly in the world today. We could ask that same question. God, why in the world would you be concerned about me or about us? And David asked that very question. How is says in Psalm 15, Lord, who may abide in your tabernacle? Who may dwell in your holy hill? I don't feel worthy, God. Why? You see him wrestling with God, with himself, with others all the time by asking good, penetrating, hard questions. A second character we're going to take a look at, this is not a Judeo-Christian character, but it's the philosopher Plato. Plato lived about the 5th century B.C., so if we kind of accelerate 500 years roughly, Plato started the Academy in Athens, which was one of the very first universities. Some people think maybe the very first university. He was a student of Socrates, maybe one of the best question askers. Here's a couple of contributions of Plato. These are kind of excerpts from other writers. Plato's contributions are: the process of eliciting the truth is by means of questions. Plato was an incredible question asker, maybe even defined this category. J.H. Randall says it was Plato who formulated most of the philosophy's basic questions and doubts. You see, the way to elicit truth, Plato believed, is by asking good, penetrating, humble questions. Alfred North Whitehead says all of Western philosophy is but a footnote to Plato. In other words, he defined how we think today because of the questions that he asked. Here are a couple of Plato's teachings that I thought were pretty profound. Plato said, I am the wisest man alive, for I know one thing, and that is that I know nothing. In other words, if that's the starting point of our knowledge, if we start from kind of the basis level and say, I know nothing, how is it that we gain knowledge and truth and influence? It's by asking questions. And Plato was one of the first to do that. He also said that the unexamined life is not worth living. So look inside ourselves and ask questions about who we are and why we are and where we're going. Those are the most important things. And this is one of my personal favorites. It has nothing to do with questions. He was a wise man who invented beer. I thought that was one of his maybe the most wise observations. So Plato, second kind of character we're going to take a look at. The third character is, again, accelerating another 500 years. We're going to take a look at a sage named Jesus. Now, of course, you're going to say, well, yeah, the preacher's going to go to Jesus. But I have to be honest with you, I've really had a great time studying Jesus because I don't know that I would have kind of by nature, naturally, and I studied theology and all this, I would not have said Jesus' predominant method of teaching was asking questions. And yet as I dove into the text and drawn out some of these incredible passages, what I realized is that Jesus was an amazing question asker. We think about Jesus, and you know, if I were to ask you, who is Jesus, you'd probably say a great prophet, you know, a teacher. Those of you who are Christians would say he was the Son of God, he was the Messiah, he was the Lord. You probably wouldn't default to he was a great question asker. And yet, as we'll see in just a second, Jesus was maybe the best question asker. We're going to take a look at Luke chapter 2, verses 41 to 47, and maybe see if we can analyze where this comes from. Luke chapter 2, verses 41 to 47. You're welcome to follow along. The Bible's in front of you. That's page 716. We'll put them on screen for you as well. Luke chapter 2, verses 41 to 47. Luke says, every year Jesus' parents went to Jerusalem for the festival of the Passover. When he, Jesus, was 12 years old, they went up to the festival according to the custom. After the festival was over, while his parents were returning home, the boy Jesus stayed behind in Jerusalem, but they were unaware of it. Thinking he was in their company, they traveled on for a day, and then they began looking for him among their relatives and friends. That probably sounds a little crazy if you're a parent, like losing your 12-year-old son. But what happened in these days, people would go on long pilgrimages, and they would go as a mass, a giant group of people, 50, 60, sometimes hundreds of people large. This was like not just your immediate family, but it was your extra family, your extra, extra, and extra, extra. So there could have been hundreds of people, and you literally parented kind of village style. So as Jesus' parents left, they left without Jesus. And the text goes on. When they did not find him, they went back to Jerusalem to look for him. After 3 days, they found him in the temple courts, sitting among the teachers, listening to them and asking questions. verses 46 and 47. I think this may be Luke's cue as to who Jesus is. I mean, obviously, in the first chapter of this book, we see that Jesus is a profound and amazing person. But here at 12 years old, I think Luke is beginning to unfold just how incredible he is. Verse 46, it says, after 3 days, they found him in the temple courts, sitting among the teachers, listening to them, and asking them questions. See, Jesus listened and asked, which seems pretty normal for a 12-year-old, right? You sit around with a bunch of wise people and listen and ask. But look at how Luke kind of twists that and interprets that. The very next sentence, Luke says this, everyone who heard him, Jesus, was amazed at his understanding and his what? His answers. Now wait a second. Jesus, he just listened and asked of the elders, right? Of the sages, the wise men, the teachers sitting around him. And Luke translates that and says, everyone who heard him was amazed at his understanding and his answers. You see, I think this is a little bit of a cue that Jesus answered by asking. Jesus answered questions and demonstrated amazing understanding, knowledge, and power by simply asking questions. I haven't done this kind of detailed analytics, but I'm told that Jesus asked some 307 questions over the course of four Gospels. And the Gospels kind of comprise the biography of the life of Jesus over the 3 years of his ministry. There's a couple of little tidbits outside of that, like what we just read. But for the most part, 307 questions over the course of 3 years documented in his biographies, his personal biographies. I'm also told that Jesus was asked 183 questions, only three of which he answered directly. For those of you who are kind of analytic people, that's less than 2% of the questions he was asked. Where are you going, Jesus? Come, follow me. Right? Jesus, who are you? Who do you think I am? He goes on and on. 183 times Jesus is asked questions, and he never, almost never, answers them directly. Let's take a look at a bunch of different questions that Jesus asked. Jesus asked rhetorical questions. Can any of you, by worrying, add a single moment to your lifespan? Is not life more than food and the body more than clothing? Which one of you would hand his son a stone when he asks for a loaf of bread, or a snake when he asks for a fish? O faithless generation, how long will I be with you? How long will I endure you? See, Jesus asked these rhetorical questions, not exactly expecting an answer in return. He's wanting to encourage people to process, to think, much like my friend Justin. Fact-based questions Jesus asked. What's your name? How many loaves do you have? Have you anything here to eat? Who do people say that I am? Very direct questions. And then he asked probing questions. But who do you say that I am? Why do you not understand what I am saying? If I tell you about earthly things and you do not believe, how will you believe if I tell you about heavenly things? My God, why have you forsaken me? And he goes on, challenging questions. Have I been with you for so long a time and still you do not know me? Why do you not understand what I'm saying? Why do you call me Lord, Lord, but do not do what I command? Where is your faith? I give you this list of questions not to kind of barrage you or in any way kind of suggest that we need to ask these very questions, but to illustrate Jesus was an amazing question asker. Here's some more. I'm not even going to put these on the screen because there's so many. Why do you call me good? Did you not know that I must be in my Father's house? Why are you looking for me? Do you see this woman? What are you thinking in your hearts? Why are you anxious about clothes? Do you think that I have come to establish peace on earth? Why are you testing me? Do you not yet have faith? If I'm telling the truth, why don't you believe me? Will you lay down your life? Could you not watch with me for just 1 hour? Are you still sleeping and taking your rest? Why are you trying to kill me? What do you want me to do for you? Do you love me more than these? What are you looking for? Who are you looking for? You get it? 307 times Jesus asked amazing questions. The people were amazed at his understanding and his commands. his answers by simply asking questions. So here's a question for us. Why do you think we prefer answers to questions? One guy named Richard Rohr, he's a Roman Catholic priest, he provides an answer that, or at least a response, that is pretty humbling to me. Richard Rohr says this: answers, they give us more of a feeling of success than closure. We have this on screen. Answers give us more of a feeling of success and closure. Easy answers, instead of hard questions, allow us to try to change others instead of allowing God to change us. Easy answers, instead of hard questions, allow us to try to change others instead of allowing God to change us. You see, easy answers make us feel comfortable and make us feel safe rather than asking hard, hard questions. So at New Denver, you heard Stephen say earlier why we exist. And the reason we exist is to lead people into a growing relationship with Jesus Christ. That's somewhat of a loaded sentence or a loaded phrase, but basically what it means is we want to follow Jesus. We want to follow in the footsteps of Jesus. And as we do so, invite others to follow along. And so if Jesus was a great question asker, and the sages through the ages demonstrated that asking questions is maybe one of the most profound and direct ways to wisdom, shouldn't we do the same? So here's what I think we can learn from this. Number one, wise people ask a lot of questions. Wise people ask lots of questions. And so naturally, the question we have to ask is, of whom should we be asking questions? And as I've kind of illustrated, I think we need to ask them of ourselves, of others, and of God. What do I mean by that? Of ourselves, of others, and of God. So asking questions of ourselves, or at least of me, I'll personalize this, goes like this. Whenever I find myself getting anxious or worried or angry or joyful or frustrated, or the list goes on and on, whenever my emotions get fired up, whenever I find myself in circumstances that are difficult, I generally try to stop when I'm in kind of in a presence of mind. I stop and say, what is going on here? What is this about? Why am I doubting this person? Why am I angry with them? Asking ourselves questions can help us reveal some answers and make progress. The same is true of others. Much like Justin, when we get together, he penetrates or asks penetrating questions of me. I think we can do the same with others. Whether the coffee barista, your boss, your subordinate, your spouse, your friend, something we can ask is, how can we be more intentional about asking questions? And lastly, of God. See, David, I think, models for us an incredible practice. Very often, I think I, and my guess is you as well, perhaps feel maybe a little intimidated to ask God questions. I mean, God's God, right? This is the God of the universe. What gives me the right to ask God questions? And yet, if you read through the Psalms, you see that David has some amazing, honest, humble, direct questions of God. I think we can ask questions of ourselves, of others, and of God. And if we're going to follow in the footsteps of Jesus, hopefully we can follow his example of asking good questions. We're going to conclude with something that's maybe a little different, perhaps a little uncomfortable. I'm going to put some questions for reflection and maybe even discussion on screen. So for a couple of minutes, I'd love to invite you to reflect on a couple of questions. There are five, and they go like this. How would you rate yourself as a question asker on a scale of 1 to 10? How would you rate yourself as a question asker on a scale of 1 to 10? Number two, why did you rate yourself that way? Three, in which of the three options, ourselves, others, and God, where are you strongest at asking questions? And then the converse, where are you weakest? And lastly, what steps can you take to grow in this practice of the sages? So if you feel comfortable, extroverts, I need you to kind of step it up here. If you want to kind of dialogue with your neighbor, ask questions, you're welcome to. Introverts, if you to reflect on this.